From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Unless round is funny.
You got me with that one. I got nothing. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, this evening, it is Tuesday, December 2009.
That'd be the 28th.
28th.
This is show number 069, am I correct?
That is... No, it is 60. Yes, you are correct. I wrote down the 68 twice because I really like that number.
Right. Well, 68 is a good number.
Yeah.
How many minions we got these days, Mr. Storm?
259. I actually mispronounced last week. I gave us too much credit. But we've actually risen up pretty much to the number that I thought it kind of was.
Goody.
Yeah.
How you doing? Did you have a good holiday?
It was terrific. It was, bleak. We were up in Cape Cod for the holidays. We had a great time. Don't get
Did
me wrong.
Did you say bleak?
Yes, I said bleak. It's Cape Cod in the off season, which would be the not summer or fall or spring, is very much the end of the earth. It's very gray, and the snow was there. It was very misty. It was very Scooby-Doo-ish, actually.
Right.
So I don't know if Scooby-Doo
was... Was there like an old amusement park?
There was.
An old haunted house on some valuable property.
There was some moaning, and I do believe it looked like a guy running around with a diver bell on his head.
Yeah. Wow. Jinkies. Yeah.
But it was very good. Got to see family up there, so it was very nice. And yourself?
I had a lovely holiday, which is sort of hanging around here. I live very near my parents and in-laws, so it doesn't involve a whole lot of travel, luckily. So that was nice.
Were there any mysteries all the same?
No mysteries, oddly enough.
That's too bad.
There were some reality show-style challenges of eating unpleasant, barely edible foods. That's not a comment on anyone's cooking. I was trying to make a Fear Factor style joke that went terribly wrong and was never very good to start with.
No, that's okay. Just hopefully your family isn't as paranoid as some people. And regardless of that caveat, we'll think you're slagging on their bacon wrapped olive strips.
Yes, actually, my mom is a hell of a cook. Makes wonderful holiday dinners, and the secret to it, which I will share, is the fact that we get Christian ham.
Christian ham.
I make fun of that. This place called Ely's, not Elio's, not to be confused with the square cardboard pizza, but this place near us called Ely's, which is like a farm where she gets her ham every year.
Oh, is that the Scrapple farm?
I don't know if she gets Scrapple from there. I would expect she gets her Scrapple from there as well.
Okay.
The ham is just outstanding from there, you know, because it's pretty damn fresh. There's also, I can't even really remember the exact reason we call it the Christian ham. I think there's just a lot of Christian iconography in the store area, maybe, maybe the people are Mennonite or something. I'm not sure, but, nonetheless, we always call it the Christian ham, to this day. And it's always outstanding. Which is, Jewish ham would be kind of odd anyway, I suppose.
Well, it's not really ham. So it's, it is ham. It's not pig ham.
Oh, I gotcha.
Ferrets.
That's a front runner already. It's not pig ham.
We actually, we do get a ham every year, and it's probably fresher than your ham.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we get it from the Point and Kill.
Oh, you mean they just sort of run a few around in a ring in front of you, and you indicate the one you want?
Mm-hmm.
Now, do they kill it for you, or do they give you like a gun or some sort of cleaver?
It depends on what you want to pay. You have to pay more if you want to kill it yourself.
More if you want to kill it yourself, huh?
In fact, if if my wife were to hear this podcast, she'd be mortified.
She would. So you basically go to the hostel of butcher shops.
Wow, we're all full of podcast titles today, aren't we?
Yeah. So, yes, we both have had good yummy ham. We both had good holidays. We finished off our It Might Be Christmas project.
Yeah, I was nigh well pleased with it, I gotta
say. I was,
say.
Too. I was, if I do say so myself, I was impressed by us.
I was, too.
I mean, just, you know, people may have their opinions, and Lord knows we have our own opinions about our own music. But I personally felt like there really wasn't any filler or a clunker in the bunch. It helps, of course, that none of the songs was longer than about 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 20 seconds.
Right.
And there are only 8 of them. But nonetheless,
we've written some pretty crappy songs that were about a minute long. So.
Yeah, exactly. and with the same time constraints, if not easier time constraints than what we had on this project. And they nonetheless, I was very happy with them. People seem to have responded well to them. So hopefully they'll become a holiday staple. We've received no cease and desist orders or otherwise unpleasant communications from They Might Be Giants. So we are to assume that they either have not heard it, which is the most likely scenario, do not care, which is an even likelier scenario, or just figure we're too small potatoes.
Yeah, I'm going to put it down in the victory column as far as that all goes for those reasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, it made it easier that we were basically putting on someone else's clothes, you know?
It's true.
Like, not that we don't have sort of our... Well, we don't really have a default song style,
and no.
Nor do they in particular, but, you know, in going through all of their music, being able to draw out, oh, okay, I see how they did this kind of song, let's do something where the percussion is like that, you know,
right,
and then
right.
Gave you something to start from.
Right.
And also, it's sort of nice having the pressure off to have everything be... like punchline-y funny all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not that we didn't do songs that had punchline-y funny and everything had funny in it, but it was kind of a fun
stretch. The pressure wasn't
on.
It wasn't like doing a routine.
Right.
It was more like doing a little art piece.
Right, right. And like when we were doing the news to us with Bob and Tom, you know, that was harder because
it was
trying to come up with, you know, belly laugh stuff with every song.
Yeah. Yeah, on top of trying to make them good songs and all of that.
Yeah.
It's hard to be us, Storm. It's very hard to be us.
God, and we have all these other things that we're doing.
I know, there's so many things.
Gosh.
And, you know, we say this a lot, and we'll say it repeatedly, I'm sure, how annoying it is when people say, you know, we have these different things, but we can't tell you what they are. But we like to also, you know, one of the reasons we were doing this podcast in the first place was to sort of give a little peek behind the curtain, so to speak, of the barely famous lifestyle that we lead.
Marginally famous, I think.
Yeah, and we like people to at least know, you know, that we're doing something, that we're not sitting around on our asses like Colton. Oh, God, that guy? Come on. But at the same time, we can't, I was trying to goad a response out of you from that.
Oh, well, stop that, you busting on Jonathan guy. That's mean. How's that?
Is yeah,
that
like good? He listens to our podcast either.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know, we want people to know that we're doing stuff and know that things are in the works. But at the same time, there are some things that we just can't talk about for varying reasons. None of them nefarious.
But we always eventually do.
Yeah,
you know?
We do. We tease, but we eventually release.
Now, today is, it's kind of a special day, or I'll say a special pod day.
Is it?
Yes, because it is the last pod day of this pod year. I know, it's become like the bat cave and the bat car.
The bat shark repellent. And
I'm going to go with that. I'm going to put pod in front of everything that
okay.
I can think of.
Is that your thing for 2010?
It's my pod thing for this pod episode.
Your pod solution?
Yes. Yes, pod it is pod. I'll stop that now. But Paul, you suggested something pretty much right before we started this podcast.
Yeah, well, it's the end of a year and it's also the end of a decade, which means everybody is putting out top 10 lists or top whatever lists, you know, top 10 movies of the 2000s or top 10 television moments of... 2009 or what have you. And we wanted to jump right onto that bandwagon because we know a gravy train when we see it.
Sure.
But we didn't want to do an ordinary thing. So I suggested that we just do, each of us do our own top 10 list of anything. Like, I don't know what yours is. You don't know what mine is yet.
Yeah, I actually tried. I tried very hard to just do sort of a random list. Hey, here's 10 things, waka waka, you know?
Yeah.
And it was stupid. So
the 10-minute mark was about
now.
Now.
Yeah, you beat me to that. Last time I was the calling it early, and I was totally going to call it right on the mark.
Yeah.
Okay. So I sort of did two different versions. I sort of fell back on the sort of, this is just the top 10 things that were kind of cool that we did.
Okay.
Or things that were mostly from this year. No, they were from this year that were great.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are sort of jumping off sort of things, like they're slotted, but they have to do with bigger things as well.
Right.
They do tend to focus on us.
Okay. Imagine that.
Yeah, I know. I also have like just a random things list if you don't want to get heavy. You know?
Okay. Well, we'll intersperse it with my list, which is meaningless and stupid.
Good. This will work out well then.
Yeah.
This will work out well.
Yeah.
All right. My number 10 was our Secretary of Geek Affairs tournament that we did.
Wow. Okay. I'm surprised you had that so low.
Well, just wait, because there's awesome stuff that happened.
I suppose.
But you know, it was a great thing to really sort of talk about what geekiness was. And, of course, Will Wheaton was designated to be Secretary of Geek Affairs, and it was just a really fun way. And I think sort of this whole year has been a lot of really connecting with the fan base and public at large in different ways. And that one sort of opened the door for saying, hey, here's a way, one of the ways that we can do this. So that's my number 10. And an idea. I think I sent you an email a while back, and it was right before the holidays and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But what would you think about doing like a similar bracketed but much smaller tournament for like the Geek of the Year?
Maybe. I'm trying to think if we go geek again, or do we try something slightly different? I definitely think we should have some sort of bracketed tournament. It should no longer be 64 teams the way the last one was.
No more than
as nice as it was to draw it out the way we did. But yeah, I'm all for another bracketed votee thing. It was fun. Not to mention it drove a lot of traffic to the site. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, let's put that out there to y'all. Hey, if we're going to do a bracketed tourney kind of thing, what should we do? What would be cool? What would be fun?
Could
what
be
would get us
based.
A lot of attention? What's that?
Could be food-based.
It could be. The thing about the geek thing is, though, it actually had, it was something that really made people think and discuss.
Yeah, that's true.
And so that's sort of whatever it is, you know.
Yeah, it shouldn't be, you know, completely frivolous, whatever it is. Like, don't say, you know, have a bracketed tournament for flavors of Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, we've guaranteed we're going to get like 24 responses that say Dunkin' Donuts.
And besides, the glazed donut from Dunkin' Donuts is still the best anyway. And it's
no,
worth
Boston
arguing.
Boston cream. Boston.
No,
cream.
Come on.
All right, there's another thing for y'all.
See, there you go. There's some discussion to be had there, but it is nonetheless frivolous. So
it's
go
not
ahead
intellectual.
And suggest bracketed tournament topics.
And it can be, you know, geek or nerd thing. It can be
food.
Thing,
I'm not
whatever.
I'm not dismissing it out of hand. I just, you know, I'm wondering if there's another possibility out there as well
to evolve it. So, okay, that was my number 10.
Mm-hmm.
So what you got?
No, you do a few and then I'll do a few.
Okay. Number 9 is Chewbacca. And it does sound like a sort of out of left field thing, and this one does not have anything to do with us in particular. But really, it's this year. It seems it struck me that Star Wars really has become an enduring cultural phenomenon, and it makes me very happy. Unlike a lot of things, like we've talked about, I think a couple podcasts ago, shows like Happy Days, where the Fonz is sort of disappearing into the mists.
Yep.
But the real Star Wars, like the original series, you know, for kids now, they still grab onto that. And it's an entirely new canon that isn't just cool and fun for
fair enough.
Folks of our age. So Chewbacca represents that to me. He's just
fair
it's
enough.
A big huggable thing.
Sure.
Star Wars. Keep going?
Yeah, do number 7.
All right, number eight.
Yeah, and you know, number 8.
This is sort of a twofer, is our minions and the merch volunteers.
Okay.
And that, again, it plays into the narrative of the connecting thing and how really cool it is that, you know, before the interwebs were what they are, you would have a fan base and you'd sort of hear from people, maybe individual emails, but mostly you were just sort of pushing stuff out and it was this faceless mass, except for, of course, when you're out performing, when it's very direct. And having people engaged in the conversations and sending pictures, you know?
Yep.
And getting to see people and how the creative things they do with it has been phenomenally cool. And on the few occasions when we've been able to harness the minions.
Right.
It has that flash mob fun thing. So
it is nice and a powerful feeling.
Yep. So that's my number 8.
Lovely. Okay, well, I will do a few then. I didn't actually put these in any particular order yet. I'm going to randomly choose. My top 10 list is the top 10 phrases, behaviors, and types that have fallen out of fashion and I wish would come back.
Oh, terrific, yeah.
Number 10, cartoony hobos.
Yeah.
Nowadays referred to as homeless people.
Huh.
And far more depressing because it involves a lot of, you know...
That's different.
Human misery and
no.
Mental issues.
Hobos are not merely homeless people.
Well, this is true, but you know, I specifically would like to see the return of the, you know, 1920s, 1930s style John Hodgman-esque cartoony hobos.
Well, you know, our good friend Len Peralta, Jawbone Len, Monster by Mail Len, is actually doing a web comic with Tom Merritt.
Oh, yes, that's true.
That is that very thing.
Yeah.
And which I'm very excited to see. So your wish has almost sort of been
granted.
That's
true. And of course, you know, Ape Lad, whose real name I don't remember off the top of my head, has his lolcats.
Adam.
Or the Laugh Out Loud Cat. Adam Coford, thank you.
Yeah.
As his Laugh Out Loud Cats ongoing brilliant series.
Which are very hobo-esque.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, I would love to, you know, when I take a train ride, I'd love to, you know, walk from... My car to the dining car, and in the in-between section, suddenly see a friendly, bepatched pants wearing gentleman carrying a bindle and perhaps eating out of a can of beans, smoking a cigar butt that he found somewhere, just telling tales.
There's a way it can happen. Basically, if the economy tanks in such a way that all of the hipsters lose their jobs, they wouldn't be just your normal down and out. They would want to be ironically down and out.
Yep.
And I can imagine that they would clad themselves as a classic hobo to say, oh yeah, I may not have a job or money in a home, but you know, I'm doing this.
Yep. Well, we'll see how that all turns out.
Yeah.
Number 9. Speaking of Fonzie, mine would be the phrase
yeah.
to indicate something cool.
That just that there aren't is not this isn't phrases in general, but that particular phrase.
That particular well, it's not, you know, the yeah that particular phrase.
So you're not dragging sit on it into the
no
frame.
no just a and the thumbs up like the okay. two thumbs up.
Okay.
To signify that something is cool beyond any measure of doubt that it is cool.
Right. Right, it's the trump card of cool.
Exactly, exactly. And a universal language, if you
right.
will. You know, along the lines of the international symbol of choking, I want to see the international symbol of cool.
I could see that on, you know, on a sign in a restaurant where you have the choking sign and the cool sign. You
yeah.
know, if you think your food is cool, there,
yeah.
that's what you do.
Yeah, just give them a little fun, sort of lean back, thumbs up. It helps if you're wearing a leather jacket, too. Yeah. Let's see, I'm down to number 8, right?
Yes.
Let's see, what else do I have? Let's do mountebanks.
The what?
There are no mountebanks anymore.
Oh, mountebanks. Yes,
yes.
That's
I don't even really officially know what that word means. I mean, I have a general idea. It is a derogatory term when you describe someone as a mountebank.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not a good thing.
No, like a fuss budget.
Yeah. There are no fuss budgets anymore either. Like, the behavior is still there, but no one calls someone being a mountebank. I always assumed it was some sort of someone who is trying to defraud someone or otherwise steal from them or otherwise fool them in some way.
I was imagining it as being someone, almost an aristocratic poser type.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
the Vicomte Mountebank.
Yeah, and that, like, I always got the impression, again, I haven't looked up the word, I have no idea, but I always assume that a mountebank is someone who is trying to defraud someone who is wealthy.
Right, by posing as such, or,
yes,
you know,
or,
something,
you know,
like
trying to take
that.
A wealthy person's money, as opposed to, you know, taking Joe Schmo's money.
Like the Groucho Marx character in many of their films.
Yeah, yeah. There should be mountebanks.
Yeah, gunning for the dowagers.
Yes. So you're right on my page there, so that works. Okay, let's get back to your real list.
Okay. Number 7 on my real list is Neil Gaiman.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for a couple of reasons. One, he's sort of, his writings have taken up a disproportionate amount of my mind share, you know, just this year, really getting into a lot of what he's written. And he's also a marker for something else that's been very cool for us this year, which has just been making some really cool friends and actually getting to meet in the persons in the flesh, a number of the people that we have met from various places or by reputation. So that's number 7 for me.
Sure. And we have caught some crap, being the people that we are, or the person I am, at least, you know, I rather regularly will sort of search around the internet to see what people are saying about us in the hopes that they're saying nice things.
Sure.
Which eventually I'm going to have to give up once if we should ever reach a certain level of fame, shall we say.
Well, there's only so much said about us right now, enough that we can, you know, we generally run into most of it. It's not like there are a billion people. Yeah.
And in a couple of places, one of them was in the comments section on John Scalzi's blog recently, someone was talking about how all we care about is being famous, which I will take most of the rap on because I'm the person who obsesses over the topic. But I believe I have made clear over the course of the last year plus of podcasts that it's not just a mindless quest and grasping for fame and hanging out with famous people. It's, you know, sort of ruminating on the degree of fame that we do have, small though it is, and sort of observing we know some kind of famous people now, and sort of observing how that affects them and our dealings with it and their dealings with it. And also, as Adam Savage put it, our close personal friend Adam Savage from Mythbusters put it, that one of his wishes in his 100 wish list was he wants to be friends with people he admires.
Yeah.
And I think that hits the nail on the head. And we have the opportunity now, given our particular station in life these days, to be able to do that to some degree. And you bet your ass we're going to take advantage of it. And maybe we want to talk about it from time to time. So there we go.
I genuinely don't care. What is cool for me is it's inspiring to me when you get to actually hang out and talk to people who have done something successful.
Mm-hmm.
You learn from that.
Absolutely.
And it's almost like you look back in history at groups of writers, groups of artists. That's how it often happens, is you have people that have similar ideas that are cool.
Yep.
And it's when these people get together and talk and just, you know, hang out or whatever, that suddenly these little ideas knit together in all of these very creative brains, and you end up with something that's so much greater than you would have. So for me, that's why I bring it up as number 7.
Sure. Okay, go to number 6.
Number 6 is Wootstock.
Right.
Which, of course, is the show that we put together with Adam Savage and Will Wheaton and a number of other really awesome folks, which ended up being really just a great little show celebration that, you know, we may do in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a good time had by all, both on and off stage. And we absolutely want to make more of them. And thank you all for having showed up for it. Because, I mean, not that we really genuinely doubted anyone would show up, but when you're, whenever you're trying a new venture like that, there's certainly a great deal of unknown out there. And we were very, very pleased with the response.
Wasn't just the number and the fact that people showed up, but just the love that the crowd had for the whole event and how fun it was to roll out, you know, we come out and then there's Wil Wheaton and here comes Molly and the audience is discovering some things for the first time and, and others are anticipating. And it really was just like, I don't know, a geek vaudeville that just
really
worked.
Was. And my favorite part of them each time, by the way, I thought was after each show, we would all sit around and, you know, people would come by, we'd sign things and sell stuff and whatever. And just the amount of joy on both sides of the signing table, so to speak. It was just like friendly, happy people. Nobody was rip-roaring drunk and trying to get into fights. Nobody was obnoxious. Nobody was annoying. Everybody was just there to have a great time and enjoy themselves. And it really all just sort of built on itself and yep. spilled over in, you yep. know, into the post show and into the rest of our lives.
Should I go to number five or do you want to get a couple
go
in
ahead.
There? Number five was the UK tour that we did with Jonathan in, I guess it was early November. We'd done the tour the year before, but there's just something about going to a different place, like an entirely different culture. Not that it's like, you know, going to Tibet or something.
Yeah.
You know, there's certainly a lot of shared heritage, starting with most of the language. But just that experience and seeing places that we hadn't, like Scotland and Ireland, and learning about the history and just the way people are. Certainly, it was like a dual thing. Part of it was that people were different and the way society is different. And, you know, people, you can just go hang out at a pub and people are just sort of social and it's normal. But at the same time, many things were comfortingly the same, like the audiences that came out for the show. We were talking about Woodstock being this great celebration of a lot of things that a lot of people love in common. And the comfort of how we could meet people after the show or see the audience. And it was fairly much what you would have in the United States as well.
Yep. Just they talked funnier is all.
Yep. Exactly. Very funny. I mean,
yeah. And they spelt lots of things with extraneous U's.
I've started using the British spelling for things like defense, you know, just because it's fun.
Okay, back to my list. Top 10 phrases, behaviors, and types that have fallen out of fashion and I wish would come back fashion or fashion. We're on number 7 for me, and that would be the carrying around of clubs.
When did people carry around clubs?
You know, back in like caveman days.
Oh, you're going way back.
Yeah, I'm going way, way back.
So we're talking carrying the club, dragging the girl or the guy by the hair.
Well, I mean that's an option.
Right.
One thing, like sexual politics were a lot simpler back then.
Right.
So you didn't have to deal with that whole maze nearly so much. Plus, it just, you know, how cool would it be? You know, it was like the iPhone of its day. It was a multi-purpose tool. Everybody had one, and they were fashionable.
Well, you couldn't really get an app for it. I mean, it was certainly...
Well, no, but I mean, you know, you could club the woman on the head.
Uh-huh.
You could club the saber-toothed tiger that's attacking your campsite.
I guess it did have Yelp.
Yeah, it had its own sort of Yelp, or you know, at least sort of...
caused Yelp.
Yeah, well, you know, it was an email system of a sort, like you could bang it on a rock. And let everyone know you were around.
I guess that is that. Well, gosh, this sort of tips my hand because I'm going to go ahead and give my number one. Then.
Oh no! You don't need to jump ahead. Just refer back to it.
Okay. Okay.
Well,
never
mind. We'll just stop talking about that. There, we'll move on to my next one. There we go.
Okay,
that'll save
good.
You. Okay.
Good.
My number six would be megaphone crooning.
Oh, yeah. Do-rock-a-do-rock-a-do.
Yes, sir. And you know, it, beyond my vast love of vaudeville, and we've gotten to play a bunch of old vaudeville houses in our day, and I'm just fascinated by the whole world, that mainly because it has so completely disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, in 100 years, you know, nobody, very, very few people around really know anything about vaudeville. I barely know anything about it, and I sort of study it to a degree, but just sort of, you know, the entire art form, you know, and it's not so much it's an art form, it was a medium, so it's tougher to know, to define it per se, but just the whole sort of, you know, let's go to the theater, and over the course of a couple hours we'll see this incredible array of performances. You know, there'll be an opera singer, and there'll be a dramatic scene, and there will be a comedy duo, and there will be people hitting each other with oaken tables and acrobats, and maybe some sort of animal act. You know, that's you could argue that reality TV has become that to some extent.
I would say even more than reality TV, YouTube is that. You know, it's almost vaudeville at your fingertips.
Yeah.
Whenever you want.
But that, you know, at risk of sounding like an old person, it sort of loses something, I think, when it becomes, you know, you can get it in bite sizes. I just like
the idea
of going to a theater for, say, 2 hours or 3 hours.
Well, that it's presented to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I like that feeling, too. It's sort of like if you're in a small town and there's like an old rail station, there's no longer any train line there. But here's this station, and it's almost like it's left to your imagination to fill in all of the blanks of what was this world that was here. And you get to see this tiny corner, and there's just something distinct, like those theaters that we've been in, that you can tell that there was something pretty special happening.
Yep. And, you know, while vaudeville isn't really megaphone crooners at the same time, that practice came out of it. But just the whole sort of, it was certainly a time of greater innocence. Of white men singing through their noses like this, and singing of spooning in June with their lovely down by the riverside, and yes, sir. And I love that whole sound, and I wish
who did that terrific sketch comedy? I get mixed up.
Oh, Mr. Show, yeah,
Mr. Show,
wonderful. One of my favorite Mr. Show sketches is about it's a fake documentary about megaphone crooners and a couple of rivals. Go look it up on YouTube. It's hilarious and awesome. And I was six. So should I do my number five and we'll get back to you?
Sure.
Number five, I got to choose one. I will say curtsying and bowing.
Ah, the decorum.
Yes. Just the overall sort of decorum and behavior of, would that be Elizabethan times? What would you call that?
Well, it wasn't even that far back. In fact, I was watching some history show, and that in this country, it was not uncommon for people to bow to each other, even into the 19th century. Like,
I suppose that's true.
But yes, the protocols of bowing, and I think it was finally the reaction of, well, that's sort of a more of a British thing. We're not going to do that anymore. That it was given up.
Okay, back to your list.
Okay, number four, and again, this is also a proxy for other things, is the flood show we did in Chicago with Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
This is where Jonathan had the idea of doing They Might Be Giants flood album top to bottom, and which we did. And it was one of those great art moments where it was sort of a crazy thing to do because we only had 2 weeks to pull it off. And it stretched our skills. Each of us played instruments in ways that we had not before in front of people.
Yep.
And it's also just a proxy for sort of how much fun it continues to be to travel and do shows with Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sort of thing that every once in a while just sort of pops out and happens that really, really makes things fun.
Absolutely.
So that's my number four.
Okay.
I'm going to flip-flop some things.
Some things.
Number two, I'm going to allude now.
Wait, what about three?
Well, this is two is now three.
Okay, so now number three, nay, number two.
Yeah. I've made an executive decision.
Okay.
It is our new smartphones, your
Yay.
iPhone and my Droid, which we've only had them a short while, and this is sort of, but it's, I can already tell, going to have such a huge impact, not only on how, and anybody who has a device like that already
yep.
knows, it changes the way you behave and think for the better, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, you pointed out on Twitter a great website of douchebags wearing Bluetooth headsets. You know, there
yep.
are certainly pitfalls that need to be avoided.
Yes.
But just the total connectedness, like I mentioned that I was up in Cape Cod for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most years I always have a good time, but I always feel very isolated, not just because of the geography, but because I didn't have access to everything that was going on.
Yeah.
And now that I have the device, it's like wherever you are, you have your
wherever
friends.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah, seriously. Buckaroo Banzai was, you know, right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
yeah, my favorite part of it, speaking of the connectedness, just as one example, this doesn't make me unique, certainly, but my favorite use of it so far since I've owned my iPhone, I went to the Apple store to pick up a couple of things. And I would, I went to the product, you know, figuring out what I wanted, saw what their price was, used my little iPhone,
yep.
and called up a Google search for that item and found the cheapest price listed by anyone anywhere and went to the guy and said, okay, this is what I need. Do you guys price match? Here's the price I found. He looked at it and said, okay. And I saved, in one case, roughly 40% off of the Apple Store's price.
Yeah.
I just loved being able to do that. I didn't have to think about it ahead of time and print
nope.
out the price and hope that they, you know, would honor it and such. It was all, you know, sort of right there at my fingertips. And it was sort of a nice real-world application of, you know what, beyond all the games and the playing around, this thing actually can be quite useful.
Oh, God, yeah. In fact, it's where Gee Whiz and useful collide.
Now, there is a front runner.
And like your example, you know, you get the app that has the barcode scanner, you know?
Yep.
You're in the store and there's like coupon apps as well where
mm-hmm.
you scan it and instantly you know if it's a good price, and beyond that, there's a coupon that will pop up on your frickin' device.
Yep.
You know, Buck Rogers, hello.
Gotta love it.
So, yeah, it's a super club, that's for
yeah.
sure. That is for sure.
Sure. I'm gonna finish off my list so that we can finish strong with the rest of your list, since my list is a fake list, so we won't dwell on my stuff too much.
No, it's all right. I mean, I like your list. They meshed well together.
They
I'll
do
say.
Mesh well.
I was
so
worried
my
about
number
seeing
four,
all. Yeah,
is the Minuet.
Huh.
And the, you know, that style of ball dancing, not ballroom dancing, but
formal
know,
dancing,
fancy, formal, complicated, choreographed dances. Just because I like the idea, the mental image in my mental mind of seeing a bunch of young 20-somethings going out to the club.
Yep.
And then, you know, dancing a quadrille.
I could see it coming back. I really could. Like for 2 years, sort of like swing dancing.
Yeah. Country line dancing to me seems a little closer. Just sort of, you know, the whole everybody get together and do the same thing. You know, other than the electric slide at weddings and stuff. There's not a lot of it anymore.
I mean, I'm talking out my ass, but I think that like the country line dancing does trace its roots to some of the that more formal dancing style.
Yeah, I would believe it. You know, it's certainly an offshoot of square dancing, which itself is, I would think, an offshoot of that type of formal dancing.
But I can see where it would take the pressure off a lot. Like
mm-hmm.
sort of, you know, I've always hated going to, you know, dance clubs, you know.
Yep.
And occasionally would in college and after college, just because, I don't know why, because people wanted to go. And
yeah.
I always felt like, what am I doing? You know,
yeah, I've always hated it too. I feel very self-conscious. I can't dance. I don't enjoy dancing. I feel like everybody's looking at me and saying, that guy can't dance.
And that's the thing. I figured out that it's the whole point of it is it's for people that want to, you know, see and be seen and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, not passing judgment or anything, not in that way. Just some people, they think that's a good time, or it's just not for me.
Yeah.
So having a quadrille would be helpful.
It would. It would be nice if you didn't have to make up dance moves.
Yeah.
Number three, the fighting of duels.
Yes.
I don't want to fight one, but mm-hmm. I think it would be cool to see people do it, like to settle a close election. Like, I think they totally should have settled the Minnesota Senate election this yeah. year with a duel.
You know, a lot. I'm seeing a common thread with not everything, but a few of your items here.
Mm-hmm.
It's structures.
It's reestablishing you know? The structure and rules of society. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was to some extent. You know, again, it makes me sound like an old man. You know, things are so crazy these days.
Uh-huh.
It would be cool to see some of the old protocols come back. Number two, twirlable mustaches. not that they are gone by any stretch, but they are certainly only really worn either ironically or by, for the most part, really strange people.
Well, I think they were always, it was always a, you know, a statement. It wasn't like, you know, everybody had them.
Yep. Beyond that, like you'll always know who the bad guy is.
Yeah,
that's the main thing. By the way, I hear my wife calling for me downstairs. She's forgotten that I'm recording, so at any minute she may come upstairs, probably to tell me that she's going to be leaving. And I'm going to continue to record until that time happens, and probably okay. through it.
And I'll actually need to.
I'm just preparing everyone in case of that eventuality of a knock on the door within the next 30 seconds. In any event, my number one thing that I wish would come back is the Algonquin Round Table.
Oh,
and
yes.
And after I came up with that idea, that, of course, was a collection of writers and artists and smart people and funny people at the Algonquin Hotel throughout the 20s and 30s and into the 40s. You know, go look it up on Wikipedia or Google or whatever. But I realized that these days, I think Twitter is our Algonquin roundtable of a sort.
And that dovetails nicely. You tip my hand. That's my number one was Twitter for that very reason and other reasons. Just
yeah. Well, do your number two first, and then we'll go to Twitter.
Okay. Number two is PAX,
yep.
Penny Arcade Expo. There have been a number of sort of watershed moments in our musical and creative careers.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the years, dating back to Da Vinci's, there was, you know, an a cappella contest, and then there was Today Show and all these things. And it had been a while since there had been like a single event or thing that yep. had that, wow, this feels really good and sort of has helped put into sharper relief what it is we're doing and why.
Yeah, the where have we been, where are we now, where are we headed thing.
So Penny Arcade Expo is the number two.
I'm with you on that.
And we are accelerating, as I will need to go pick up my wife from the metro soon as well.
No
problem. This is our longest podcast to date, and it's great.
Yeah, that's okay. It's the end of the year.
Oh, it's great. So
top 10 lists to get through. That's fine. So your number one, as we know, is Twitter.
And it melds with yours in that, yeah, just like the smartphones have changed the way we think and behave for the better for the most part. So too Twitter, and this year has really just been amazing to think a year ago our primary way of communicating with the public at large and with fans has been either through our email list or through posting on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And now we still use those things, but much larger in sort of the day-to-day. Twitter is just such a great way. If you don't have some huge, big announcement, you can still yeah. get it out there and entertain people and hear from people much more directly. And, you know, we've been able to bring things to light through our presence that fans and friends and other folks have brought to our attention. And it's just, it really is like an Algonquin round table where everybody has a seat,
mm-hmm.
potentially. So. Yep. It's fantastic.
I like that. What yeah. a lovely note to go out on, Storm.
Yeah, thank you. Well, thank
Yay
you
for you.
Framing it that way. I can't believe our list sort of came together to a point there at the end.
I know. That was totally not planned. That's how awesome we are.
We must be awesome.
So with all that said, we look forward to a great 2010. It's already pretty much mapped out through the beginning of April. You can go to our website and see our schedule. I think pretty much every show is up on that schedule now, including, you mentioned PAX earlier, PAX East which is happening in Boston in the weekend of March 26, 27, 28.
Hold on. You talk. I have to talk to my wife.
No problem. We've been officially given permission now, even though the lineup isn't finalized, which is why they haven't said anything about it. We are allowed to say that we and Jonathan Coleman will be at PAX East, which is happening in Boston in the end of March, like I said, along with many other shows. Florida, swing through Florida and Atlanta is going to be our first tour in the middle of January. Then we're going to be two nights at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. February brings us to, Texas and Phoenix and San Diego and Los Angeles and hopefully Vancouver. That's the only one that's not official yet. We're working on it. Seattle and Portland. Back to the Birchmere in D.C. in March. Again, go to paulandstorm.com. You can see the whole schedule there. Lots of irons in the fire, lots of things that we are working on that we hopefully will be able to talk about in the next month or two.
As a sort of final thought, also thank you for all of you who are listening to this.
Yeah, it's amazing. We appreciate it. We had no idea what to expect when we started this up, and here we are, 69 shows later.
Yeah. And it's really, really enjoyable for us. So thanks for that.
And we plan to continue doing it. Hopefully more special locations and guests and such. That was one of my favorite experiences was the podcast we did from the sauna in Neil Gaiman's house while most everybody was drunk.
Yes.
Hopefully more events like that in the coming year of podcasts.
And anything can happen.
So don't forget to join the Brigade of Minions if you have not yet. I guess that's everything.
Except that I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Just how old is the Lang Syne, anyway?
Go do things.